Welcome to Q&A with T&K. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A with
T&K.
I'm Tiffany. She's Kristen.
We still cannot get that right, even though we're looking at each other.
I'm trying to point, like, okay, then me, and then you, and then me. It's hard.
All right. What do we got for question, Tiffany?
All right. Our question today is, how do you keep parents on board with your philosophy without feeling the need to prove it to them? This one comes from Heather in Nova Scotia.
Boy.
Toughie.
It is, because I constantly feel like I'm trying to prove it to parents.
Yeah, me too.
Uh-huh. It's very hard. I don't know. It'll be a wonderful day when we won't have to.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
I don't know if that day is ever going to come. I mean, I feel like there are parents that are always on board, but part of being a parent is learning as you go.
Exactly.
And a lot of parents that I get, this is their first time having a three-year-old.
Exactly.
And so I see it as our role to sort of teach them the ways of three-year-olds, because we spend a lot of time with three, four, and five-year-olds.
Totally. How do you go about that, though, if parents have absolutely no interest or they're not curious? I mean, curiosity is kind of a central theme that we come back to quite often, that you have to be curious in order to understand something. Mm-hmm. How do you do that if parents aren't, they don't really care?
Oh, that's tough. I feel like if a parent doesn't really care, they're maybe not the ones you're trying to prove it to.
Right.
I would say that.
Yeah, that's true.
If they don't care, they're like, yeah, sure, you know what you're doing, do it.
That's very true.
But also,
in the same breath, those parents have friends outside of school who are saying, oh, you send them to that school where they run around like crazy, or the hippie school. And what, they're not learning anything there. They're just playing. So then they get that from people, and then they start to second guess, like, oh, why am I sending my child there?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that I deal with. Well, first of all, I think what we should do, let's tell each other and our listeners what we do for parent education. Like, what do you do when a family comes in and is interested in your preschool in Oregon? What do you do at your school?
Well, first off, let me start this by saying I feel like I'm new to the parent education side of things. Mm-hmm. That was a goal I set for myself for this year. And, you know, it's my first time through doing parent nights and really jumping on board with parent education. Not that I was against it, but I feel confident in what I feel confident in the classroom enough that I can move to that step.
Right.
With that being said, whenever anybody comes into the classroom for a tour or anything like that, I'm very honest with how we are. I kind of love it when they come in and there's like goop all over the kids.
Yeah.
You know, things are going on. I also don't hesitate to stop a tour to teach.
Right.
If, you know, the kids are arguing about a thing and they need help, I'm going to go help them.
Definitely.
And I like to make sure that when people come in on tours that they're seeing the real deal. Other things, we have our handbook online. I don't know how easy it is to get to, because our school district website is kind of complicated to me.
Right.
But they can just read straight up about our philosophy and our mission statement and all that online and see pictures. We have a Twitter feed too that links to the website, and I like to post really messy pictures.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, hey, look what we did today. Here's a picture of every kid in my class in a tree.
Right.
So I want parents to have a realistic view of what they're getting into. I also feel like I'm in this kind of unique situation where there aren't a lot of other preschools in the area for me. Mm-hmm. We're kind of the standard, as it were. And so, it's not like they're choosing this crazy alternative school, which I feel like right. you kind of have that stigma. We're in the public school. We're the public school.
That's awesome.
So that kind of takes that away from that end of things.
Right.
What do you do to inform new parents?
Okay. So this was when I started the preschool. We've finished our first full year, and now we're headed into our second school year. We're actually starting the registration process for next summer and fall. In I think about 2 weeks, I start our first parent information meetings. So, what I decided to do when I first opened is, I found that I think our philosophy is so different than anywhere in town that mm-hmm. we needed, I can't concentrate when you're,
I'm sorry.
She's writing me notes.
Can you back up just a little bit? There you go. There you go.
Is that better?
That might be a little too far. A happy medium.
Here we go.
There you go. There you go.
Check, check. 1, 2.
Yeah, there we go.
So we have these parent information meetings. Parents are required to come to a parent information meeting before they can register their child at our preschool. So it's a commitment. They know that they have to come in. It's about an hour of their time. And I talk about play-based learning. I talk about nature-based learning. I talk about child-led learning. And just kind of fill them in on all of the things that they must know about our preschool so that they can make the best educated decision about where they're sending their child. And so... the first year we were in operation, I can't even remember how many families we had come through. I would say probably 60 to 70 the first year of parent information meetings. And they're always held in January. And we held about 6 meetings. And they're in the evenings for about 1 hour, 6:30 to 7:30. No kids, just because it's really hard for parents to concentrate.
Yeah.
And... So last year we had probably 35 more families come, and I don't know how many to expect this year. However, we did send out like a flyer to everybody in the district, so about 700 families, so they know about our parent information meetings. So we'll have 3 of them this January, and that's what we do. We talk about play-based learning, and we talk about child-led learning and nature-based learning and why we do those things. We talk about messy play and risky play, kind of all of the things that parents may have concerns over if they didn't know about before they start with us. Mm-hmm. So we try to lay it all out there for them so that they can make the best informed decision for their family. We found it works really well. And I'm sure that parents kind of like roll their eyes knowing that they have to come to a meeting to find out what it's all about and it's mandatory, but that's just what you have to do if you want to get into our preschool. So there's really no ifs, ands, or buts. But then... So we have those information meetings in January. If they miss it and registration has already passed and we still have openings, then I meet one-on-one with families, but I still require them to come in and meet with me one-on-one. And I basically talk about all the same things that I talk about in the parent information meetings. So that kind of ends up being more like a tour when parents come in just on their own. And I give them our handbook and all that kind of stuff. And I lay it all out. They know exactly what they're getting into. So I think I'm kind of reflecting on this right now because I'm kind of in the process of creating my presentation. And I have done PowerPoint presentations the last 2 times, but I don't know if that starts to feel too teachery.
Yeah.
And not so playful.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I'm going to switch it up this year. I don't know if I'm going to do a PowerPoint this year. I don't know. I think, might do some sort of a group bonding activity. Yeah. I don't know.
You should make them all climb a tree.
I should. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
But you can only climb as high as I can reach. I don't want to get squashed if they fall.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. You don't want to have to catch them.
The first year, it was more I kind of use a lot of like research statistics because we hadn't actually had a group of kids in here yet. So I used lots of statistics from research about nature learning and child-led learning and play-based learning and examples of research that has taken place in early childhood programs and shows how young children learn through play. Then the next year, I used a lot of photos from our first year. We had already been going for about 4 months, so I used a lot of pictures for the PowerPoint presentation. And I used pictures of kids on top of shelving, and I used pictures of kids covered in mud. And I think I almost like I went too far, like rogue on it. And I think I scared some families away. Like, oh my gosh, there's like absolutely zero structure. And I think I scared people away. And so I think this year I'm trying to reflect on that and figure out what's a nice balance, because we are a program that's very balanced. We have a lot of play. We have a lot of child-led learning. I mean, that's what we're built on. We spend a lot of time outside, but we also let children make their own decisions and we help talk through things. And I don't want parents to get the picture that we're wild and crazy. So I'm trying to figure out that nice balance so that they take me seriously this time.
Yeah. And I think it's important to not just attract the families that agree with your ideology, but attract the families that are on the fence too.
Exactly.
Because those are the ones that you can really make a big difference in their kids' lives.
Definitely.
I mean, you'll make a big difference anyway, because you're awesome. Right. But it's the ones that are on the fence that need somebody to kind of help them make the jump. That I think you have the most impact on overall.
I think so too.
Yeah.
It does. I have a family in particular that I get the feeling like she came to one of the information meetings last January and then enrolled her son, and I love her son and it's like the perfect place for him. But I feel like she is not really on board with what we do. And so at his conference, I actually she questions a lot of things about why we're doing what we're doing. And I just took it as that I was taking it as that she didn't believe in what we were doing was right. And so I was getting very defensive. And at his conference, there was one point where she just kind of kept asking all these questions about why are you doing that? And so I looked at her and I just said, you know, I'm starting to get the feeling that you just don't, that it's very hard for you to believe in the value of play-based learning. And maybe this isn't the right place for him or your family if you're having all of these questions and all of these doubts. And she said, oh my gosh, that's not it at all. She's like, I'm trying to learn from you. She's like, that's why I'm questioning everything, is because I'm trying to understand my son and why he does so well here versus other places, or versus at home. And I'm trying to learn from that and understand what is good for my 3-year-old son. And so that was really cool. I mean, it was kind of I thought she was attacking me and she probably thought I was attacking her. And it's that we finally came to this realization that we're just in it for the best interests of the child.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it was kind of I still sometimes think maybe she doesn't 100% believe, but she knows that that's what her son needs. And so she's willing to do that. And she was also one who brought up the question, like when my friends are saying, oh, is that all they do is run around. He's a little boy that he cut his hair the day, like,
oh yeah,
one day when he was at school here. Yeah. And then he had colored all over his face with marker the same day, and he had to go to the haircut place and get his haircut. And I think the haircut girl was questioning, like, oh my gosh, what kind of preschool do you send him to? And so
the exact
she
kind that he
is
needs.
One who asked me to come up with some sort of a little pocket guide for parents. Like, how do we defend your preschool to the public? If we believe in what you're doing and the public, like our friends aren't believing, what do we say to them? Do you have any advice for what I should put on that?
I think an FAQ page is always super helpful.
Yeah.
And I think you're already doing a lot of what is helpful, and that is having answers.
Yeah.
When people come to you and you're like, oh, why do you do this? And you're like, oh, because it's fun. Like, that's not what they're looking for. They already see the surface value of like, oh, this is great. You know, like my kid likes it. Everybody seems like they're really on board. But what they're looking for is the more purposeful intent behind it, I like to think. Right. So when someone asks you, like, why do you send your kid there? Having a concrete answer that's based in research,
right,
that's based in passion, that's based in life experience, like having all of that covered, I think is really important.
Definitely.
And yeah, not having imposter syndrome. I'm wagging my finger over the camera right now. Imposter syndrome is something that I struggled with for a very long time and still do. And that is the idea that you're in this field and someday everyone will figure out that maybe you're not good at it.
Okay.
And it's a thing that a lot of women in like roles of leadership go through. It's like
okay.
a very common lady problem. But
really?
Men go through it too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And for me, it was a big age thing. I went straight okay. from undergrad to grad school to teaching. I'm still one of the youngest people on my staff, and I've been at this school for 4 years. Okay. And just that idea, like, oh, I graduated high school like when all of these parents had already been married and like they're so much older than me. Why do they right. trust me with their child? Are they going to figure out that I'm this like young, new to the scene person?
Yes.
And I think kind of getting over that hump and realizing, hey, you know a lot about preschool kids. You spend
yes.
a lot of time with 3, 4, and 5 year olds. You do a lot of research on the topic. You're very mm-hmm. passionate about it. They have things to learn from you too. I think
right.
that's really important.
Oh, see, isn't it funny how like I never would have thought that about you? I just see you as such a confident, awesome, fun-loving person that knows a lot and does her research. Like I never would have thought, oh, no. that you have or have had imposter syndrome.
I do. I do kind of hardcore.
Really?
I fake it really well.
Yeah, you do. Well, look at you now. I mean, come on. Like, look at you now. You're podcasting.
I'm feeling more confident. And that's why this question kind of like, whew, it hit home to me because I feel like I've always had to prove it to parents. Like straight yeah. out the gate, my first day on the job, the parents looked around and said, "Where's the teacher?" to me. And I was like, yo, dude, I'm the teacher. Like, oh, they thought that I was just like a high school helper. No.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I do wear dinosaur sweatshirts, but I'm also not 16.
Aw. Yeah. You know, I am not the youngest one on our staff. I'm kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. I am in the middle. So there's 2 older and 2 younger. But I have feeling, you know, I struggle too because the 2 that are older than me have been doing this for a lot longer than me. I mean, they've been teaching for a lot longer than I have. And here I am in the position that I'm in trying to, you know, change the way they view things and change, you know, feed them information to help them understand why we do things the way we do them here and how I want things a certain way and how, you know, they've had to change things too in order to be able to work in this environment and work at this preschool. And sometimes that's hard for me because it's like I'm asking you to change something that maybe you've been doing for so long, but they are so good about it and they love what they're doing and they want what's best for the kids. And I think I've done a really, really good job of just informing them and teaching them and guiding them mm-hmm. that they are all on board. And it's amazing. I love it.
I think that ties back into our keeping parents on board question too, because if you front load it, and approach it as, hey, you're a new preschool parent. Let me teach you all these things and share my passion with you. That mm-hmm. helps you from getting on the other side of it, which is like, I feel like I'm being constantly judged by the parents. How do I like put up a shield to that judgment. And right. I think it's not necessarily putting up a shield to that judgment, but approaching it from the other side, and approaching it from an angle of information. Just like you said, when you talk to that right. parent, you realize that they were trying to figure it out and embarking right. on their own learning journey. So kind of meeting them in a learning journey, I think, is good too.
Do you ever send home like articles or anything like that that you find interesting that pertain to early childhood education for your parents to read at home? Or do you have a blog, don't you? Do your parents read your blog?
I don't know. I'm not the best blogger. I get really excited about blogging and I'm like, I'm going to do it every week. And then I fall off the wagon. Mm. I'm a good tweeter. I can tweet. I'm a great tweeter.
I don't know how to tweet.
Tweet, tweet.
Tweetly dee. Nope, I don't know how to tweet.
But blogging's hard for me. The email spam is a little easier. I've done a couple articles that way. I think I might be setting up a Facebook page soon. Do you have a Facebook? Do you share things via Facebook?
Yeah. We have a school, just a public Facebook page, Butterfly Hill Nature Preschool. And then we also have closed ones for our parents, too. So sometimes I share articles on there, not a lot. I do share some articles here and there on the Butterfly Hill page. But we do send home paper copies. It's not eco-friendly. But sometimes I feel like if it's in their hand and they see it, maybe they can like sit on the toilet and read it. That maybe they'll actually read it if it's a piece of paper in front of them. And the really cool thing was, is I sent home last month. We call it our article of the month. So it sits out on the shelf in the entryway, and we also give it to every parent and put it in their child's folder so that they take it home and read it. Mm-hmm. Last month we did one. I don't know what you want to call it. I'm not very good at like names of articles. It was one called from Peter Gray. He wrote it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily an article. What is it? If it's not an article.
It was like from his blog. Was it a blog post?
No, it wasn't a blog. It's like a journal maybe. Okay. Or I don't know. Anyway, it was. I can't even remember what it's titled. It's out in the entryway. I should go get it. But we sent that home, and there was a lot of information in there about, like, Sudbury schools and unschooling and child-led schooling and project-based learning. And one of my parents of one of my four-year-olds, he is a middle school, is he middle school math teacher? Or maybe he's a high school math teacher. He's a math teacher in either the middle school or the high school. Okay. And he came in and he said, that article was crazy good. Can I have a few more copies of it? Because I was telling some teachers at the school about it and they want to read it too. And I was like, yes. So that's I handed it to him and I'm like, that is so cool that like this is making its way now into the public school system.
Yeah.
So I thought that was so cool.
That's awesome.
So that is kind of the thing that can happen. If you do send home like a paper copy, like that dad may never have checked his email.
Yeah.
And if he saw an email from the school, he may never have looked at it, but he had this paper copy in his hand and he read it and he loved it and shared.
Yeah. All avenues. Hey, Kristen, I have a plan.
What's your plan?
Will you run and get that article so we can learn the name? And I will talk to our listeners about adding questions.
Okay.
Okay. Kristen's going to run because she's at school, so she can go get the article because it sounds great. And I'll tell you about we need more questions. Send your questions to q4tanda@gmail.com. We like all kinds of questions. I even like questions that require some research. We also could use some more what would you do's. So if you're dying to ask us a what would you do question, send it our way.
Fabulous. I got it. It is called The Play Deficit. You see that?
Yeah.
The Play Deficit by Peter Gray. It's 5,100 words.
Oh, not bad.
Yeah, and it's just a fabulous little, well, it's not a little read. it's one of the longer articles that we've sent home. Normally, they're just like two pages, like front and back, but this one is like seven.
Oh, nice.
It's long. But we kind of, you know, I thought it was a really important one. So it was The Play Deficit. You should read it. It's good.
Sounds good. Yeah. With our What Would You Do prompt just now, Kristen, are you ready?
I'm ready.
What would you do? Okay, Kristen, you're staying late at school. For whatever reason, you're doing the aftercare. Everybody else is gone. You've got like 5 kids still hanging out, waiting to get picked up. Okay. It's kind of dark. It's winter time. And in flies a bat from the ductwork that is clearly crazy and rabid. Kristen, what would you do?
Oh my gosh. It's like rabid.
Oh yeah. I mean, why else is it flying around? It's cool. There are kids there. It's loud. It's upset.
Man. Okay. So it's flying around and is it dive bombing us?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my. Well, thank goodness I have rooms connected to our preschool. So I would this is what I would do. I would, run all of the kids into my office and we would hang out in our office and I don't know who I would call. Who would I call for a rabid bat?
And would they come right away?
I would do a Google search. I don't even know. I think I would do a Google search and put it, you know, like pest control.
Mm-hmm.
Because you would need a professional to come and remove that thing.
Yeah. Because let me tell you from experience, trying to usher a bat out of a building that still has light outside, if it's darker inside than it is outside, they're like not going to go.
Oh. Oh. So it needs to be darker outside?
I don't know.
Oh.
I'm not a bat expert in that area. Just to be trying to flap it out of the classroom area.
Oh, my gosh. Do you think bats are cute or ugly?
I think they're adorable.
I do, too. I do, too. I wish that you could have, like, a pet bat.
Yeah. And it would, like, cuddle. So I bet it would just hang, like, a little chameleon. It would just hang on you.
Totally.
And be
it would,
so
like, hang
soft.
On your... It would put its little feetsies on the collar of your shirt, and it would, like, hang down the front of your shirt.
And it would look up at you lovingly and blink.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. And then it will give you kisses.
Oh, little bat type kisses. Full of what? Rabies? What do you get from bats? Lyme's disease?
It's rabies. Rabies? Bats don't have Lyme's disease.
Oh, what's in their poop, though? That's really bad. That's where you'd have a lot of issues. The guano situation.
Asbestos, maybe? I don't. No. No idea.
It's an indoor-outdoor bat, so it goes outside and then comes in for cuddles.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I would do. I would bring them all in my office, call pest control. But if pest control couldn't get there, I would call the church janitor and say, come deal with this.
SOS. Well, Kristen. Oh, I like your plan.
Usher it off onto somebody else.
Yes. That's what I Well, Kristen, it's been fun.
Tiffany, it's been fun.
We'll see you next time.
See us next time. See you next time. Q&A with T and K.
Bye.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.